Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi!
I'm Kevin David Thomas.
I'm Rob Schneider. I just creeped into the room on you.
Yeah, you did. Sorry. Hello, hi, Rob.
I'm sneaky and stealthy.
Yeah, you are.
I'm a stealthy one.
Oh, is that a little
Mr.
song you're going to sing?
I was going to do
Grinch. The Grinch, right?
Yeah, I was going to do Grinch for you. Speaking of Grinch, are you following this casting controversy with the Edward Albee estate?
Yes.
I know this happened a couple of weeks ago, but we haven't seen each other in quite some time.
I know. I did read a thing about that because he got aggressive, and good for him. The actor, I forget his name. I should know his name.
But
give us a rundown of it.
Oh, so anyway, there was a theater company, I believe in Portland, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
a small theater company that's mm-hmm. doing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Edward Albee's play. They cast an African-American actor to play the role of Nick.
Yep.
And the Albee estate said, no more. You're not doing the show anymore.
And then we promptly went back to 1962 and
And the Dramatists Guild made some statement. There's two lines in the play that refer to Nick's blonde hair and blue eyes. And then there's a joke about Nick being a member of the Aryan race. And that's, so there's two okay. lines in the play that deal specifically, because you remember there's this idea that Nick is doing genetics and it might be cloning and all that stuff.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, it's two lines that don't really have any bearing on the rest of the play.
Right. It's not central to like the storytelling. And
but the Albee, I did not realize how strict Edward Albee was with casting, because big theater companies had to send him headshots.
Really?
Yeah, and be like, this is our cast. This is who we're looking at for all of his plays, not just Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, but all of his work. So they pulled the rights, and they're not giving the rights, and they're standing by it saying, this is not what Mr. Albee wanted, and everyone else is saying, well, it's kind of 2017 at this point. We can move on.
Have you seen Hamilton? Because they basically say all the same things in Hamilton.
David Cote, who's a brilliant critic,
who
used to work
him.
At Time Out at New York, and now he's doing his own thing. He said something along the lines of that Virginia Woolf is now part of the classical repertoire.
That's right.
So the only thing that we can really do at this point is do things like this to help make it seem fresh, so you don't feel like you're seeing the same production over and
very
over again.
Very good point, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I get that. But I was a little disappointed with the Dramatists Guild statement, because it sort of just was on the fence. It said, we're going to protect Edward Albee's work, but and you know, it's kind of weird.
It's not a little diplomatic, a little political.
It was a little too on the fence for me. So I mean, how do you feel about this?
Our listeners, live and let live. I mean, yeah, if some small theater company is going to pay to still, so I guess the argument is, what is Edward Albee's estate losing by them doing this? The integrity of this amazing play by having a man who is not white play this part. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What is their concern? Because they're still getting paid the rights for it. They're still getting to, you know, have this work be done and be known by a community.
Albee had discussed this at some point before he passed away, and he said, it doesn't make any sense for those characters to... It's a realism play. That's the one thing he said, is that it's a realistic play. It's not absurdist. It's not changing, playing around with time. And he said that at that time, there would not have been African-American characters anywhere in those four, because, one, that means that they would have talked about it. That race would have been discussed at some point.
And on a college campus.
And it's weird that they're doing this and they're not talking about it. He's like, if George or Martha are African-American, does that mean there's an African-American president at an all-white school, or is it an all-black? It was all over the place. So that was he actually had something to say on it, even though he's passed away. So that's his defense of it. But you were saying, I'm so sorry I interrupted you. You said,
I hear that, but I also say, like, who cares? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's our generation. Who cares? You know, like,
it's theater.
It is theater. So the fact we're talking about it is it's doing its point. But also, that is exactly what I would think someone would say who is born in 1920. I forget when he was born. But it just seems like a very dated way of looking at it.
It's a play. It's a story. We are making a pact. It's the power of imagination. Mm-hmm. We realize that none of this is real. And even if you want to say it's realism, they are saying lines they have memorized automatically. We're not being real or spontaneous. Totally. They are moving where they've been told to move.
I mean,
they're not.
Josh Henry's going to be Billy Bigelow. Was there a Barker in, you know, the carousel in Maine up on the wharf back then? I don't know.
Well, that's also creating controversy, because now what they're saying is people are going, is it okay the carousel's now going to be about an African American man who's a convict that beats his wife?
No, but what idiot thinks that that's what suddenly this is going to be about then? You know what I mean? Like, that's just that you're just assuming, not you, but like others are just assuming that now that's how people are going to filter it. What if there's a new generation that's like, oh yeah, that's cool. I mean, I didn't even think of it like that. You know, they're imposing that onto the.
So let me ask you this. So you think that this company in Portland, they should do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Godspeed, bless. Let's do it.
Yeah, live your life.
I agree.
Yeah, totally. Why not? I mean, it just seems too precious to say, oh no, that's not the way it was intended, so therefore you, theater company, you're not allowed to do that. That just seems silly to me. It just seems to me, if they wanted to do a where Martha and George are cross-gendered and they want to try it that way, I say, whatever, just do it. It's art. Like, who cares?
You put something out into the world, and that's sort of the point of a playwright, right? You put something out into the world, and then
You could be precious about your production that you started in the original, and you can be precious about whatever you are involved with. But I think once you release it, you have to let other people interpret and maybe do what they want to do with it. And as long as they're saying their words and all of that, I mean, I understand that I'm not a playwright, so it's how easy for me to say all of this, because I'm sure a playwright's like, no, it should be the same way every single time. But I think that when something reaches legendary status, I think you should be allowed to explore. And time changes, man. It's like, it's been decades and decades and decades.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I would sit there. I wouldn't sit there going, oh, this is odd.
How dare they?
It's pretend. We're pretending.
It's built in. We already know it's not real.
We already know it. Who cares?
Once upon a time. Dum, 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 dum. You're welcome.
Thank you. You'll be here all week. And then this carousel thing should be interesting, because they're saying that that's now, unless that...
I was like, brilliant casting. I thought, yes.
You know what? That's
Josh Henry's a perfect Billy Bigelow. He's got sensitivity, but he still can be scary. And
I heard Josh Henry, and I'm like, oh my God, what a great choice. Yep. And I was talking to some friends about it, and they're like, oh, that doesn't bother you? I'm like, why would it bother me? I'm like, because like you want a bigger name or something in that role? Like I don't like us. Like what's the issue? And they're like, well, you know, he's gonna be African American.
So Audra winning the Tony Award in 1994, 95, see, like that wasn't okay. Like, I don't know. Carousel. I think
he's gonna be good. But then the question becomes, could you do that on something like, you know,
you're gonna do is like reverse, like
can you do Fences as an all Latino cast?
So here's the thing, though. You could argue that Who's Afraid and Carousel, while having issues and relationship topics and all that, is not exclusively about race.
Brilliant.
So for me, Fences is the African-American story and a history and a capsule of a very specific, you know, socioeconomic, racial time and place and voice. And August Wilson is the voice of African American, you know. And so I think, yeah, no, that's like, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that. Like,
so if the play is specifically about those themes and ideas,
I think so. I think that's okay. Why once on this island, Lynn Ahrens rewrote the lyrics so that schools can do it where it's not about race, you know, the light skinned girl, light skinned man, and the black girl, you know, the T Moon and all that, but it's about class. It's about, oh, she's of the poor people and he's of the rich people.
Do you think a playwright in this day and age, when they write a new play, has the right to say, whenever this role is being performed, it must be performed by an actor of the male gender who is African American or who is Caucasian American? How do we...
Yeah, I know. I think it probably depends on the play. It depends on how the playwright and how specific it is to the part. I mean, if it's a trans, if let's say we're doing a new play and it's a transgender part, like literally like Southern Comfort that was done at the Public Yes. Theater, which is literally about transgender. There is a character in there. You know, I think you need to hire a transgender actor. I think that is just like a given. You know, I guess it's a new world, Golda.
It's a new world, Golda.
I don't think there's hard and fast rules either. I think we love to do that. We love to say, no, it's got to be like this. And I think it just depends.
I think that's great. No,
what about you? What do you think?
I think whoever is the best person to tell this story, I'm willing to go with. I saw Anything Goes a few years ago with the Kathleen Marshall directed. I went with an older person and they were like, you know, I'm not racist. Anytime anyone says I'm not racist, it usually means, and you are racist.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
If you have to preface it.
I'm not against gay marriage. I just, you know, I love gays.
Well, then it's a sin.
It's a sin. There was a scene where an African-American man and a white woman were walking across the deck of the ship together. They were sitting together. He goes, well, that wouldn't have happened in 19th. That wouldn't have happened. Mm. That wouldn't have happened. It's just not real.
Okay.
I'm like, I think when they all said blow Gabriel, blow in unison and all right? went into a time step, I don't think they did that in 1934 either, but I could be wrong. You know, that it's theater. It's the suspension of disbelief.
Agreed. And if you, I just experienced this with, I mean, this is completely somewhat different, but the imagination of an audience is captivating. As you know, you're a director. Hello, I don't need to tell you this. But I just did that one woman show where Carissa played an 80-year-old man and herself and other characters. I have to tell you, that audience was putty in her hand. They liked the 80-year-old man almost more than her. I mean, they loved her because she was creating that. But she... you could hear a pin drop when she was using it was him and speaking like him. They believed it completely.
Audiences will go with you.
Yeah, totally.
Audiences will go with you.
And if it's done well, then it's done well. You know what I mean? There could be a really crappy production that tried to do that and try to change things up, but it might have just been a really bad production.
Oh, I think we've seen lots of those.
You know?
Right? Wouldn't you agree with someone? They were like, we're gonna spice it up by doing something different.
Just for the sake of it. Well, that's different. Like you said, if the best person that you want to tell that story is hired, then let's do it. Let's see Josh Henry. Let's see this, you know?
Who cares? But
no, I don't want to see Andrew Keenan Bolger in Scottsboro Boys. Like, that's not probably something that I want to see. You know, I don't think that's appropriate.
No, I mean, I'm sure Andrew...
No. But Andrew, I love to hear you
Andrew's
sing.
Crying right
He's
now.
Like, when I'm gonna go back home. You know,
I literally picture him practicing a song at the piano right now, just one single tear.
No, that's not. I think that's probably not a choice we're gonna go towards. But or like a Dreamgirls. That no, I don't think that. But
oh yeah.
But I think some of these other like iconic plays that aren't tied to, by that. I mean, A Glass Menagerie where a Tom is of color. Yeah, sure. You know,
who cares?
Who cares? I mean,
is he a good actor?
Exactly.
Is she a good actor? Who
cares? Yeah. Isn't that the whole point of Hamilton, was showing us that?
Yeah, they can do it, but nobody else can, apparently. It gets a little wonky if anybody else does. So this is, anyway, this is a big
well done, though.
Debate. I just wanted to ask you about it because we haven't had a chance to talk about it yet.
I like that.
But what do you want to talk about?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Oh, I have a book.
You have a book?
Yeah, and you're going to know it immediately. And this is something that I'm shocked that we have not talked about yet, to be honest. And I actually looked back three times now to see if we had actually...
Oh, I think I know what it is. Yeah, because you're right. I know exactly what you're going to tell me. Not since Carrie.
No.
Oh.
Close, though. It's the next one down. It's The Season.
Oh, my God.
A Candid Look at Broadway, 1969, by William Goldman, who you may know, friends, who wrote The Princess Bride, or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, or many, 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 many other things. In a nutshell, he made a lot of money off of Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid and could take some time off. He was always a lover of Broadway. And so for 18 months, Mr. Goldman, who I believe is still with us, Mr. Goldman researched and went to see every single Broadway show and play of that season, 67 to 68. It was published in 69.
And very quickly, what does his brother do?
Follies.
Yeah, his brother was James Goldman.
Yeah.
Follies and The Lion in Winter.
Yeah. And so some talent in that family.
And Murray Goldman, who works at H&R Block.
Good old Alma Goldman. No, and so in this season, I guess what's fascinating to me about this book is, well, A, he did exhaustive research. You can tell that this man appreciates and loves Broadway, and he's a really good writer. And I've been told to read this book for years and years and years. Kevin, you love this book. Kevin, it's so fascinating. And it's a dense book. There's a lot to it. I feel like every single chapter is an essay that you could read on its own. And this is the year that Little Foxes happened. If you're thinking of this Broadway season, it premiered Little Foxes. Plaza Suite was the big show. The Price, which we're seeing this year as well. And so I guess I know you can talk a lot about it because I know you know this book and love it as well. I feel like this is a nice time capsule taking us back to what it was like in the late 60s to see theater, because there's a lot of things that they had back then that we don't do anymore. Like the old lady parties. I say old lady, but the way they used to have women, would have these parties and they would fund shows by having they would all go to see the shows.
The theater party ladies.
The theater party ladies. That's right. I think it's interesting how you get to see what the finances are like. He pretty much puts a theme with each chapter. One of the more interesting and I find disturbing parts of it is the way he talks about homosexuals. That, we are literally seeing in the 1960s that to be homosexual is like a thing, and there's almost like they're a homosexual, but it's okay, you know?
I think a couple of people he quotes there use the F word pretty liberally.
Oh, yeah. It is. And it's he's pretty open and he's honest, and he's not mean about it, but you just see how people thought about certain social, experiences back then, and I find that utterly fascinating. But yes, he groups each chapter. Sometimes he'll focus on one show, like How Now, Dow Jones, and then oftentimes he'll group it together by a theme. Like, these are the shows of plays that, were flops because you needed one strong person of, you know, in the show, whether it be the director or the actor or something or the producer. And that if you don't have that, maybe it won't work. Or if you have the wrong person be the muscle of the show, then maybe it won't be focused enough. And he really goes in depth and really explains it. Not always saying this is the play, this is what it was about, and this is who is in it. But a lot of times he gives you this backstory.
Oh, this, yeah, this isn't, no, you're absolutely right. This isn't like a dry, you know,
and then this
and
happened.
Then this happened, and it opened on this date.
It's a narration. He talks in the first person,
and he gets a lot of backstage stories because it sounds like people let him into rehearsals and meetings.
And because he wasn't just some Joe Schmo, but this is the man who wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Like he's connected to the business. People respect him, and of course they're like, "Yeah, come on in, Bill. Like, let's hang out with us and talk." And you get these real deep insider views of what it was like in the business in this time period.
50 years ago. This is the 50th anniversary 50 of the season, right?
Yeah.
67 to 68, yeah.
I meant for that to happen on our 70th episode.
You're so smart. You're so tall.
It is just, and so the other little side thing that I appreciate about this book, for the musicals at least, and maybe you can speak more about the plays, because I don't know as much about plays as you do, but we all know that this time period, Hair is included at the end of this book. His experience going to see that. We all know, and you teach musical theater history, and I'm an avid student of it, Hair was an epic turning point in the history of musical theater. So we are seeing the cusp of that with these less successful shows that ran. I'm thinking of Fig Leaves Are Falling or How Now, Dow Jones and Henry Sweet Henry and Her First Roman and these musicals that we don't remember today. But that traditional book form musical was kind of, I don't want to say dying out, but becoming less popular and paving the way for a Hair.
Yeah, because Broadway, it's really interesting because usually theater is the first to react to anything socially. Just because it's immediate to do so.
That's right.
And so, ironically, the musicals didn't really follow suit. It was movies and television, movies really, that were really going forward because we had this whole big movement in cinema at the time that was raw and more documentary mm-hmm. style mm-hmm. and more visceral. And the musical theater wasn't doing that. Musical theater That's was right. doing things like, well, I mean, what's the plot of How Now, Dow Jones? Think about it. The guy says to the girl, the woman announces the stock numbers, and she wants to marry him.
Yep.
And he says, well, the day the stock market hits this number, then I'll marry
yep.
you.
Yep.
And so she announces that number, and it causes panic. And we go, oh, isn't that funny, dear? I mean, think about the plot we're just talking
oh, yeah.
about.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Trivial.
Very trivial. I mean, kids are getting killed in Vietnam. You know, every night you're seeing it live in living color on mm-hmm. television. People are being assassinated. I think he even talks about that in there, that the Martin Luther King assassination happens.
Yeah, that's right.
During, I think it was like opening night of The Education of Hyman Kaplan.
That was the other one,
which was
yeah.
another. Musicals were not catching up, but Hair did. Hair was a lone wolf in all that pack. I think people forget that.
That's right. And some people say what they want about the concept of it and the way it was done. But it really came at a good time. People were ready for something different.
Absolutely.
That reflected the times.
Absolutely. And people thought that's what musicals were going to be. They were all going to sound like Hair. And that did not happen.
No.
At all.
And I think there can only be one Hair. And that's, yeah.
But the structure changed. How a story is told. Suddenly the book musical went out, this linear fashion went out, and we got Company
type shows,
and
yeah.
Follies and Working and all
yeah,
that chorus
indeed.
Line where
indeed.
We could play with time
yeah.
and stuff like that. So yeah, sorry, there was a long tangent.
I fully agree, and that's what this book does, is it raises those issues, and you see a real glimpse of how the times there are changing a little bit, especially with musical theater.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't know yet, even when he was writing it, that Hair would be, that, you know, it would change as much as it did, but you sense it. You can tell.
This, I mean, the you're absolutely right. What puts this book over, though, is the writing. His writing style
Sublime.
Is fabulous. It's funny. It's smart. It's
insightful.
Yes. Now, once again, I just want to remind everyone, I'm a professor, and I could not get out the word insightful.
But you're pretty.
Says who? How long have you had glaucoma, Mary?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Oh my gosh. The Season.
The Season by Wade Boltman. Check it out. God, it's good. It is, I think it's essential reading for
you're
this
so
business.
Good.
Yeah.
What a good one.
And you can understand why I looked so many times thinking, surely we've talked about this before.
We've never talked about it. Surprised. Oh my God. I'm so happy we hit that.
So what's your favorite thing today, Mr. Schneider?
Mine, you know what? It's going to be a TV show.
Ooh, Facts of Life.
You take the good, you take the... Never
there
mind.
It is.
Sorry.
Charlotte Ray.
Sorry. No, you know what? I'm not going to do... Charlotte Ray's impression's going to go away for a while. Just kidding. I'm back.
Girls, girls.
Girls. I want to sing in Hamilton.
Aww.
I could be in Waitress.
You'll be back.
She's not King George.
I don't know.
I'm a lion. No, she's Peggy. Eliza. Peggy. No, that's Paul Lynn. Jeez, I only do one voice. This is a television show that is funny on its own, but if you're a musical theater fan, I think you might get some more out of the humor of it. This was a television show that a lot of modern comedy writers today consider to be very influential on them. But I want to look at the show not because of the great comedy that it did, but its brilliant satire on elements of musical theater.
Huh. What decade was this?
Ah, the show ran from 1981 to 1984. That's when the show was in its heyday.
Yeah, I'm not. There's no way.
It's from Canada, eh?
SCTV?
You are absolutely correct.
For real?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, so bear with me.
I see. I'm looking over your shoulder and literally looking at the box sets of SCTV right there.
Countless comedy writers,
oh.
Louis C.K., Conan O'Brien, the people behind The Simpsons, all said they did not grow up on Saturday Night Live. They grew up really on SCTV. SCTV was stood for Second City Television, Second City being the famous improv group out of Chicago, had a Toronto location, and the skits and characters that were created in these Toronto and Chicago performances were so iconic that Canada decided, can we do an equivalent of SNL? And they created SCTV. And listen to this cast. Are you ready for this cast?
Yeah.
These were all unknowns. This was the all unknowns. John Candy, Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Rick Moranis, Catherine O'Hara, Dave Thomas, and Martin Short. Not to mention Harold Ramis.
Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy have known each other for that long.
Oh,
and they're
yeah.
starring opposite each other in Schitt's Creek right now, which
yep.
incidentally is a fantastic television show. I cannot believe that.
What SCTV was, if you've never seen it, it's brilliant. The writing is brilliant. They are geniuses. I'm going to go on record. I find it funnier than Saturday Night Live.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just it's so well written and so clever. The premise is it's a network in Canada. And you get to see the shows that the network produces, and you see the backstage happenings of the network itself. And there are so many funny skits that you might know, like Ed Grimley, the Martin Short character, wore the plaid shirt with the. There's the two guys from Canada, Dave and oh god, what are their names? Oh my god! Oh my god! You're yelling it at me right now. It's two brothers from Canada, and it's going to drive me crazy. And as soon as we stop recording, I'm going to be like, and it's
look
the
it up.
The McKenzie brothers.
Oh, nice.
I got it. The McKenzie brothers.
Thank God.
Where they cook Canadian bacon and drink Canadian beer. There's Eugene Levy's slick Vegas comedian, Bobby Bittman. There's John Candy, who does Harry, the guy with the snake on his face. It's just genius. But the skits were so much smarter than
yeah.
SNL's. And I want to give a couple of them to you now because they are theater involved. Tell me what other show does this? There's a Christmas parody of Neil Simon's Sweet plays. There's Plaza Suite, California Suite. Then they did the Nutcracker Suite as written by Neil Simon.
Oh, my gosh. That's so
and
specific.
And Dave Thomas and Andrea Martin play Neil Simon and Marsha Mason.
What?
Who else has a Neil Simon impression in their roster ready to go at any second? It's Joe Flaherty's Alan Alda. Catherine O'Hara is Maggie Smith. Andrea Martin does Marsha Mason, who just cries in every one of Neil Simon's movies. So all she does is cry. Eugene Levy is Judd Hirsch. It's called the Nutcracker Suite. Then Andrea Martin and Catherine O'Hara do a parody of feminist musicals. They do a parody of I'm Getting My Act Together and Taking It on the Road in a musical.
That's so specific.
Here's the musical they do. I'm taking my own head, screwing it on right, and no guy is going to tell me that it ain't. It's a feminist musical. It is one of the funniest things you'll ever see in your life. There's also, this is genius to me. In the 80s, there was a minute 30, 90-second commercial for Evita with Patti LuPone. They recreate it shot for shot, and it's called Indira. And it's the story of Indira Gandhi, not Eva Perón. But they literally create a Broadway commercial.
Indira!
Yes! No way. They create it shot for shot. They also do some like celebrity impressions. Like Andrea Martin does Phyllis Newman. Who does a Phyllis Newman impression?
Right?
She does Bernadette Peters. She does a character named Lorna Minnelli, who's a cross between Liza Minnelli and Lorna Luft. And then Martin Short does a character that's genius called Jackie Rogers Jr., who's an albino lounge singer that only sings from Little Me. He does an animal show where he sings to a squirrel and goes, "Pardon me, miss, but I've never done this with a real live squirrel." So SCTV is pretty genius. I just wanted to give it a shout out. Because I don't know if anybody that doesn't do theater be like, the Nutcracker Suite, like, what's this? I don't get. But when you like, I know Neil Simon and I know Plaza Suite and I know California Suite, and they're doing the Nutcracker as if it was written by Neil Simon. Oh, then they do a Chekhov play, The Cherry Orchard, where accidentally Mr. Chekhov from Star Trek beams himself into the play. And they're like, Chekhov's here. And he's like, no, I'm a character from Star Trek. And all these old Russian aristocrats are like, do you want to see the orchard? And he's like, no, I want to get back to my ship. You're like, what? This, it's so.
How did I come up with that?
I don't know. But I just wanted to give it a shout out because I think it's so special. And also, so many of these people went on. I mean, we have Andrea Martin, thank God, on Broadway all the time.
Yeah.
Eugene Levy did Encores. He did Promises at Encores a while back. I mean, how I would love Rick Moranis, Seymour from Little Shop, who doesn't perform
anymore.
He just retired.
Yeah, he became.
You know why he retired?
He wanted to be a dad, right?
His wife passed away, and he wanted to be a father to his kids.
Listen to me, but yeah, he wanted to be a dad. Yeah, and could afford to. So yeah.
So listen. Oh, and then the best. I'm so sorry. I just have to end this.
More.
At the end of the Nutcracker Suite, John Candy plays James Coco. And you're like, who does a James Coco impression? Like, what am I watching?
It seems like this show was made for Rob Schneider for 2017. Like, they knew that you would watch this, and they made it for you.
There'll be a sad little gay little Jew 40 years from now. He's already read the season. What do we give him now?
Holy
do you like
goodness.
That? That's my demo.
No, I really like that a lot.
That's my demo. So mine is SCTV because I think it, just for the theater
that's
parodies.
Great. I've been meaning to watch that. I will now.
Oh my God, I'll post the clips. Yeah, awesome. The Nutcracker Suite is pretty genius.
And mine is The Season by William Goldman. Check it out. Great
oh my
book.
God.
Fantastic.
Read
book.
And watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great choices.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.